just wanted to bring clean water to everybody in the world.
I am unwilling to give up, that I will start over from scratch as many times as it takes to get where I want to be.
You just want to make sure you will get knocked down, but just make sure you don't get knocked out.
So your only choice should be go focus on what you can control.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Kara Golden Show. Join me each week for inspiring conversations with some of the world's greatest leaders. We'll talk with founders, entrepreneurs, CEOs, and really some of the most interesting people of our time. Can't wait to get started. Let's go. Hi, everyone. It's Kara Golden from The Kara Golden Show, and I'm so excited to have my next guest here. Scott Harrison is the founder and CEO and author. We'll talk about that as well, but of a company called Charity Water. And for those of you who are not familiar with Charity, we will definitely hear a lot more from Scott about this incredible organization. As I said, he founded and he is running. So just a little bit about Charity. And Scott, do you call it Charity or Charity Water?
Charity Water.
Okay.
I know. It's not very creative, right? We're a charity that helps people get clean water.
I love it. So it's a nonprofit focused on bringing clean and safe drinking water to developing nations. And Scott started Charity Water back in 2006 after he witnessed firsthand what a lack of clean water could do to a community. And many years later, 15 years later, Charity Water has raised more than $557 million in helping many, many people in many countries, 12 million people in 29 countries. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
It's amazing. That's right. Amazing. And as I mentioned, he's also the author of a book that I read when it first came out. It's an excellent book, and I reread it prior to the podcast, called Thirst. So good. You need to write another book. I'm sure there's many, many stories after this one was out as well, and it's such a good book. Thirst is really, really great.
Wow, thanks.
Scott has also been, I should mention, recognized as Fortune Magazine's 40 Under 40, Forbes Magazine 30 list, and was recently number 10 in Fast Company's 100 Most Creative People in Business. So he is a total rock star, and we are so excited to have him. He just was telling me that he moved to Nashville after many years in New York. So we'll hear all about that. So thank you, Scott, for coming and sharing more about this. So take us back to the beginning. Did you always know that you were going to do something in kind of the nonprofit section, the water sector? I mean, did you always know that you were going to be giving back in some way?
No, I was a club promoter for 10 years. So I moved to New York City at 18 to rebel against a very Christian conservative upbringing. And I thought the best way to get back at my parents in the church would be to become the biggest nightclub promoter in New York City. And that was my big idea at 18. I started smoking and drinking and chasing models around the world and doing drugs and all of these things that I thought would bring me happiness and success. And over the next decade, I climbed up that ladder of New York City kind of social life and worked at 40 different nightclubs. And this was a life that, you know, you'd have dinner at 10 at night, the club at 12, some after hours seedy place at 5, and then kind of stumble into bed at 10 a.m., when other people are on their
coffee
breaks.
I'm embarrassed to say I remember those days as well. So,
it was probably a shorter phase for you. Unfortunately, it was 10 years of my life. And after a decade in the business, I wound up emotionally, spiritually, morally bankrupt. This kind of degenerate, decrepit, soulless human being at 28 years old that had come so far from faith and any sort of morality that I've been brought up with. And, thankfully I came to this realization. I had a massive life change, sold everything I owned and said, can I make my life look exactly the opposite? Mm. What would it look like to be useful? What would it look like to serve others? Can any of my talents actually make the world a better place? You know, could I find a purpose? And it took me to a humanitarian mission in Liberia, West Africa, a post-war country where I embedded with some doctors and surgeons as a photojournalist. And it was really there in a two-year period of time where I saw people drinking dirty water for the first time. And I think this was in such sharp contrast because I had been selling water in my clubs for $10 a bottle. And I remember people would come in, they would order water, you know, 10 bottles on their table, 20 bottles on their table. They wouldn't even drink it. They would just drink the champagne or the vodka. And I saw, you know, human beings dying because they were drinking diseased water. And I was 30 at the time, and I had sold everything I had. I'd quit the drinking and the smoking and the drugs and kind of, you know, started living clean. And I just came back to New York after this experience with a very clear life's mission. I just wanted to bring clean water to everybody in the world. I thought it was crazy that human beings alive today on planet Earth don't have clean water, that 10% of the planet is drinking dirty, disgusting, diseased, toxic water. And we know how to solve the problem.
So let me stop you there. So when you're in Manhattan, and did you have a friend working on this, or how did you get connected? I mean, how did you go from New York City?
No, I got this crazy idea. So I was raised in the Christian tradition, and I got this crazy idea to tithe one of the 10 years that I'd selfishly wasted, you know, back to people in need. So I just started applying to famous humanitarian organizations I'd heard of over the years, Doctors Without Borders, World Vision, Save the Children. And 10 organizations denied me, and one organization accepted me. So I really had limited options. And that was an organization going to post-war Liberia, West Africa. And they took me on as a volunteer photojournalist on the mission. The crazy thing was I also had to pay them $500 a month for the pleasure of volunteering. So it was really the opposite of my life.
Were you a photographer, or were you just like...
Well, I was.
Yeah.
I, kind of as a hobby.
Yeah.
You know, I put up a bunch of pictures on a blog, and you know, I'd gone to NYU part-time and gotten just a general communications degree. So I was a pretty good writer. I was a pretty good photographer. And I had this network built in over a decade of 15,000 emails of people who had attended my parties. So I was able to tell them a very different story, you know, kind of on a dime. Instead of inviting them to the Prada megastore opening in Soho, I started telling them of the amazing work these doctors were doing of people getting access to clean water as well in Africa.
Can you imagine? You probably, I talk a lot about when I was starting my company, Hint, how I moved from, you know, nice tech role into, you know, starting a beverage company. And the number of people I heard from, I didn't necessarily invite their opinion, but heard, you know, what are you doing? Why are you starting this water?
Yeah.
I can imagine people saying, Scott, it's not, you'll be fine. Don't go to Liberia. I mean, this is like
people were intrigued. I mean, I will say, you know,
yeah.
I mean, many of them had done cocaine with me, you know, 2 weeks previously.
Right.
You know, at 3 a.m. in some nightclub. And, you know, they were a little cynical, like, oh, this guy's going to go save the world now.
You know,
oh, what? Scott's a humanitarian. You know, he's probably just trying to get girls.
Right.
So there was definitely a lot of cynicism at first.
But so often I feel like if you don't kind of go through the journey, right? I mean, you talked about how 10 had rejected you, ones that you had applied for, but that one said, yes, come. And look at this, you were able to actually generate the idea that would become Charity Water today.
Yeah.
I mean, right? Just from that moment. And if you didn't go, do you ever think about that? Like if you didn't actually, I mean, it probably, I think back a lot where maybe I had the doubters, maybe I had the, you know, doubts of my own, like, what am I doing? And then all of a sudden you just sort of roll with it. And then just as Steve Jobs used to say, I talk a lot about the dots eventually connect, you know, it's just, it's a wild.
I mean, it was pretty ridiculous. I had zero experience.
Yeah.
And, you know, to start a water charity or, you know, to hear me running around New York City at 30 years old saying I'm going to bring millions of people clean drinking water, it certainly seemed like a farce to some people. But, you know, again, because I had this 2-year authentic experience, there was also a credibility that came with what I had done. You know, I hadn't gone on a mission trip for a week. You know, I had lived in this country I lived in West Africa for a year and a half. And I had seen this up close and personal, both the problem and also the solutions. I came back to New York City, you know, 2 years later, I had 50,000 photographs mm-hmm. that I had taken. So I had these stories, I had these photographs and this kind of, clear vision of what I wanted to try to do. And then I think there was just a lot of passion and idealism. And I would take, 15 meetings a day and 14 people would say, no, thanks. I'm not going to help. This is too new. You know, who knows if you're going to be successful. And then one would say yes. And then you would kind of grasp that one yes. And you would go on to the next 15 meetings. And then, a couple months later, two would start saying yes. And 3 out of 15 would start saying yes.
So what was your original ask when you were having these meetings?
Well, you know, I had a vision to structure Charity Water very differently than a traditional charity. Again, being 30 when I started this, I didn't know anything about philanthropy. I was very inexperienced, and I just came at this like an entrepreneur might. What problem am I trying to solve? I'm trying to get everybody in the world clean water. Okay, that's going to take tens of billions of dollars, if not, $100 billion to achieve. And I realized so many people just didn't trust charities. So many everyday people working at Sephora or Chase Bank or MTV, they were cynical. They were skeptical. They'd say, where does my money go? How much of my money is actually going to reach the people in need? So I had this idea, what if we could separate the overhead from all the public donations and, promise the public that 100% of every dollar they gave, whether it was one single dollar or $1 million, mm-hmm. would go directly to build water projects that would help people get clean water. And then in a separate bank account, I would go and raise all of the overhead from entrepreneurs, from business leaders, from people who understand you needed to recruit and retain the best talent to build a world-class organization. So that was kind of the big idea. It was, one out of like 1 million charities were doing that. And we've run this with 2 bank accounts. So I always had to figure out what my ask was. Let's say I was meeting with you, I would probably ask you for a donation to help fund the next employee, mm-hmm. right? Because you're an entrepreneur and you understand that talent is so important to build something. If I was talking to somebody who was cynical about charity, I would say, hey, would you help me build a water project in a village to give them clean water? So I was constantly, trying to assess which bank account to raise money for. And 15 years later, with a $100 million budget, it's still very much the same. We're trying to figure out what is the right fit for any given donor or supporter.
So interesting. So you go from the nightclub industry to starting a nonprofit and raising money, not here, like down the street, for countries all over the world. And what similarities in sort of opening a new club versus starting this entirely new project? Were there similarities in kind of kickstarting and raising awareness, raising money that you saw as like, oh, I can do this?
I think the skill that I'd learned was promoting. Mm-hmm. I was promoting the idea for 10 years that if you got past the velvet rope, if you sat at VIP table number one next to Jay-Z or Puffy or, Jim Carrey, if you spent $1,000 on booze, your life had meaning.
Yeah.
You had arrived. Yeah. And, I think the story that I've been thankfully telling for the last 17 years is, if you are looking to give of your time and your talent and your money in service of others, if you're kind of not embracing the apathy that comes with seeing all of this suffering in the world, but if you're engaging, if you're activating, then your life has a greater purpose and a greater meaning. So I've been, you know, preaching this message of generosity and compassion, you know, for 17 years versus, you know, get past the velvet rope and get drunk or wasted or laid, you know?
Yeah. It's so interesting. So you, what was the first year like in building this company? I mean, what was the hardest part?
Well, it was a lot of meetings and, you know, the hardest part about our work, and, you know, you're in the liquids business. So, you know, most people just take this stuff for granted. Yeah. We take clean water for granted. You know, everybody, I guarantee everybody listening or watching this did not wake up this morning and take a shower or, you know, make their coffee or, you know, grab a hint out of the refrigerator, you know, on their way to the gym and say, boy, I'm so grateful for the clean water. You know, I need to do something about the 771 million people globally who have never tasted clean water, right? It's just, it's not top of mind. This is not a problem we experience in the developed world. Even if you're in a low income, you know, how's it like? You have water, right? We have water in America. We have water, you know, throughout Europe. So that's kind of the biggest challenge, is just getting people to understand this is a massive issue. It comes with extraordinary amount of human suffering. It deeply affects women and girls, who are the ones that are bearing, you know, this burden. Women and girls are the ones that are bearing this burden. And it's also a solvable problem. We know how to do something about this. So the first year was just telling that story on a laptop, going back and forth and back and forth and trying to get people excited about engaging in this.
That's interesting. How much did you raise that first year? Do you remember?
I think 2 million. So it was 2 million the first year, 6 million the second, 9 million, 16, 23, 28, 35, 45. You know, it was kind of a lot of growth in those early years and a lot of momentum.
What made you keep going when you had those hard days, those lots of no's, those?
Yeah, seeing the progress. I mean, knowing that as we moved this forward, people were getting access to clean water. And I've been to 70 countries now. I've been to Ethiopia 31 times. So it's really important to me to keep getting out there every couple months in the villages, you know, seeing the progress, knowing that we were really making a difference.
So huge. So how has the pandemic impacted a lot of your water projects throughout the world?
Well, there were some, let me say at the top, I think, well, if you all remember at the beginning of the pandemic, we were all being told to wash our hands like crazy, right? I mean, we were washing Amazon boxes as they came in. So I think people realized the link between clean water or water and health. And clean water is more important than ever during a global pandemic. And so many of the 29 countries where we work, you know, there's not a single ventilator in the country. I mean, we're talking about ICU bed capacity here. There are no ICUs in many of these areas. So the prevention was so important. So Charity Water employs about 1,500 locals now around the world through our partner network. And they were out there with masks on, drilling through the pandemic, building hand washing stations, talking about social distancing at charity water points, rehabilitating broken water projects at health clinics to make sure these clinics had the clean water that they needed. So the work was really able to continue because they were classified as frontline essential workers. I think similar to your experience as well, right? Nobody wanted to stop the clean water from flowing during the pandemic. So they obviously took a lot of precautions, but we were able to continue the work and get, you know, more than 1 million new people clean water last year alone.
That's amazing. What's been the toughest country to do your projects in?
Oh, gosh, probably Ethiopia, because a civil war broke out about a year ago in the north, which is where we have a high concentration of projects. And, you know, this is a country I know and love well. Again, I've been there more than 30 times. I've taken 400 different donors there over time. And it just a devastating civil war broke out between the people of Tigray and the central government. And, you know, the suffering, the toll on families, on children is just, you know, inexplicable. And it's made that country extraordinarily difficult to work in.
I'm sure you get asked this question a lot. So the U.S. Obviously, it's different types of issues. One of the projects that I've been working on in Washington is around clean water and getting things like PFAS and things like that out of our water supply, which especially in sort of lower income communities can be hidden very nicely, but can yes. actually cause cancer causing ingredients, et cetera. Yeah. Do you get pressure at all to look at the U.S.? You're a U.S. company. I mean, have you thought about doing some projects in the U.S. just because you know how to get this stuff done?
Yeah. I mean, one of the I'm a big believer in focus. So we have built a 15-year proficiency on helping the rural poor in the world get access to clean water. So we don't even work in urban environments. Of the 770 million people globally without water, 18% of them live in cities and towns, and 82% of them live in rural environments. So we are only focused on rural. We're then focused on the lowest income countries around the world. America officially has 100% water coverage. We know that's not true. We know there's pockets of Native American communities, when those pockets in Appalachia. Ethiopia has 50% water coverage. So there are literally 50 million humans in a country like Ethiopia that don't have clean water. So we've really been hyper clear about our focus. I'll give you an example. When Flint happened, you know, a bunch of people were like, hey, what should Charity Water do in Flint? You know, and our execs got together and said, Flint does not need a New York City charity with a focus of, you know, Africa, India, Southeast Asia, parachuting into Flint, Michigan, pretending we have any idea how to solve a $1 billion infrastructure piping crisis. So we just sent our donors to a bunch of local Flint charities and said, give directly to these orgs who have been working in Flint, Michigan for 20 years. Don't give us a single penny. And there is an org that we send all of our domestic interest to called Dig Deep. George McGraw is the founder there, and they are working on those Native American lands and in pockets of Appalachia on the U.S. water crisis. That is what they do uniquely. They don't work at all overseas. So, you know, I'll tell somebody if I come off stage and they're like, well, how come you aren't working? I say, here they are. Please give them money. Don't give us a penny if that's your passion. You know, normally they're going to give money to nobody.
Right.
Those kind of people.
Well, and I think what you touched on too with any entrepreneurial ventures, you need to know where to put your stakes in the ground. It's like people will say to me, you know, ah, I like Hint, but I just wish that you added a little bit of sweetener to it. And I'm like, there's a lot of those.
Yeah. Great. There's another product they can buy, right?
That right. Not it's not my thing. And I think knowing your lane, maybe that's not the right term, but knowing what your stakes are in the ground around, I think is such an important piece. I totally, totally agree. So you launched a super cool awards program I read about called Tiny Heroes. Can you share a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I mean, so Charity Water now, you know, we've raised about $600 million from 1 million extraordinary, just everyday people, to be quite honest, around the world. You know, we've worked with a few companies, but it's really about everyday people. We focus on individuals. And so many kids have inspired us. We've had 8-year-olds sell lemonade 12 weekends in a row. We've had 4-year-olds paint for Charity Water and raise $5,000. We've had people walk across the country. We've had kids donate their birthdays, not accept any gifts, not throw themselves parties to raise awareness. So we wanted to honor, you know, some of these kids who had made a big impact. Kids have raised millions and millions of dollars for Charity Water. And then we want to kind of look at them and their impact 10 years later. So some of the kids 10 years ago were 6. Now they're 16. Some of them were 11. Now they're 21. So this Tiny Heroes campaign is really just a way to honor them, honor their contributions, and hopefully inspire, you know, this next generation of young kids, of activists who can, again, say, like, I could do something that would help people get clean water. You know, it costs $40 to give one person clean water for 10 years. $40, right? That's not that much money. And there's a lot of kids that can go sell $40 worth of lemonade and help one person, or $400 and help 10 people. And that we've just seen, you know, a movement now across 147 countries of supporters kind of make clean water something important to them and engage with us.
I love this so much. So not only have you shown that you can actually go do good, but I think also just the way you've done it from like I said, I loved your book, Thirst. You talked about just the events that you have to raise the money. You've done it in such a unique way. And then just activating your email lists. And I mean, just you've been able to do, I think, what many kind of stodgy philanthropic organizations have not been able to do. I think you're definitely the blueprint for many, not only entrepreneurs for doing good, but also for people who are wanting to start something around a social good. No, I mean it really, truly. So tell us more about where we can find you, where we can find out more about Charity Water. Everybody definitely pick up the book. I mean it, Scott. I think you need another book too, because it was a good one. And it really, entrepreneur, it had me, you know, really thinking. And as I say, I love reading entrepreneurial books, because the journey is never, I mean, people just think, oh, that guy, Scott, he just woke up one day and raised a ton of money and he helps people. Right. Yeah. And people don't know.
It's not linear. There's lots of challenges. And, you know, I wanted to write the book too, just to talk about some of those challenges, those moments where we were almost bankrupt or insolvent and, you know, but sticking true to your values and your vision, you know, and kind of fighting through that. How to get involved. We have this amazing community called The Spring. Mm-hmm. And, you know, think of this as Netflix or Spotify or Amazon Prime for clean water, except you don't get music and you don't get TV and you don't get free shipping or packages turning up at your door in 2 hours. And it's a membership community where people give a little bit every month, $10, $20, $30, $40 a month. And 100% of that money helps people get clean water. And then we report back on the impact. So, you know, maybe there's someone listening that could donate $40 every month and at the end of the year help 12 people get clean water. And that's the future of Charity Water, which is really this global community of people showing up loyally, giving a little bit every single month. So that's probably the number one thing people could do. I mean, we have people sponsor whole communities. As I said, there's 129 entrepreneurs now that pay for the overhead of the org.
I love it.
You know, which is much bigger donations. But I think that the best way people can engage is just go to thespring.com, thespring.com, and you can sign up in less than 20 seconds and learn more about that community. There's some videos online you could help us share and get the word out. And that's one way everybody could help. That's kind of the future. You know, a lot of people coming together, giving a little bit, you know, allows us to have a really big kind of dependable growth impact going forward.
I love it. Well, thank you so much, Scott Harrison. Very, very great to have you here this morning. And thanks everybody for listening. And you can find me on all social at Kara Golden with an I. And if you haven't had a chance to read my journey and my story in my book, it's called Undaunted, Overcoming Doubts and Doubters. I hope you'll pick up a copy or get it on Audible as well. It's been a lot of fun. I can't believe it launched a year ago this month. So it's pretty crazy.
Well, you need to write another book as well.
I know. Well, actually, it's as I have said, I turned it all in right before the pandemic. And I feel like, you know, the last 18 months in terms of leading a company and you know, learning about being an essential product during a pandemic and not laying off anybody in the process too, but instead amazing. Just trying to figure out what other roles people can do in the company when offices, which we were about 15% of our overall business was food service, corporate food service. So that shut down and then we just reallocated people all over the place. You just have to, none of the stuff, as I always say, and I think you'll agree with me, is brain surgery. It just takes a lot of thinking and it's exhausting at times because you have to think, right? About so much of what can you do? And those are the stories that I really try and get on my podcast. So anyway, thanks everyone. Thank you so much. And thank you, Scott.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.
Before we sign off, I want to talk to you about fear. People like to talk about fearless leaders, but achieving big goals isn't about fearlessness. Successful leaders recognize their fears and decide to deal with them head on in order to move forward. This is where my new book, Undaunted, comes in. This book is designed for anyone who wants to succeed in the face of fear, overcome doubts, and live a little undaunted. Order your copy today at undauntedthebook.com and learn how to look your doubts and doubters in the eye and achieve your dreams. For a limited time, you'll also receive a free case of Hint Water. Do you have a question for me or want to nominate an innovator to spotlight? Send me a tweet at Kara Golden and let me know. And if you like what you heard, please leave me a review on Apple Podcasts. You can also follow along with me on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and LinkedIn at Kara Golden. Thanks for listening.